Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the Weekend Reviews, a chance to reflect on this week's news stories at home and abroad. And as always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome to the program.
Simon, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to sharing ideas, learning something, and I'm raring and ready to go.
And from the City of Angels, well-known psychologist, Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, welcome.
Hello. Good to talk to you. And once again, an incredibly slow news week, but we'll have to see what we can come up with once again.
Right. Indeed. Okay. I think we should kick off with a political story just to get everyone's blood boiling. I have to admit that my favorite political story of the week has to be Texas Governor Rick Perry. He's been indicted by a grand jury on two felony charges. Needless to say, the Republicans are calling this a political stunt by the Democrats. But there's just a little issue with that claim. The only Democrat involved is the here victim, Tavis County DA Rosemary Lemberg. The judge and the DA that moved the charges forward are both Republicans. I just chuckled when I heard this. Did you have any thoughts, Sam?
I'm not. You know what? I think that's why he started wearing his glasses, because he thought no one would think it was somebody else that they were indicting. Remember, that wasn't his look when he ran for president 4 years or two, 3 years ago. And now he has the glasses, the cerebral look. So he thought he could hide behind his glasses. I think you got to say something in Texas, regardless of what we think about it. Obviously, its legal system works. I didn't know he was under, somebody indicted, grand jury, presented the facts, and usually grand juries, when you hear about them, aren't politically motivated. I mean, they hear the facts, and they say, yes, there's an indictment, no, there's an indictment. They don't care who the person is. They just review the facts, and that's it. It doesn't surprise me that there actually was a grand jury convened over it, because usually these governors of these states, especially like Texas, are so powerful, people might be afraid of the boomerang effect from the governor, regardless of which way it came out. My favorite Rick Perry story was during the debate when he completely forgot what he wanted to do. He turned to Rick Santorum and was like, well, how many departments did I want to get rid of? It was hilarious. I mean,
Remember that?
What department did I want to get rid of? He just got blasted. And deservingly so. And I think he was thinking about running for president again. This would obviously destroy him, which is a good thing for the Republican Party. They won't have to deal with Rick Perry and his crazies, and they might actually be able to focus on electing someone decent. In Texas politics, a month is probably a lifetime. He might be a hero when he puts up a fence or something to keep the illegals out, and everybody might forget about this. But, an indictment, a grand jury indictment on felony counts in politics is a serious thing. It probably should happen more. There's more governors, more mayors, more council people and whatnot. They should look at looked at everything all of them do, especially the ones in a powerful governor's state like Texas, there'd probably be a lot more indictments. So, Rick Perry, your 15 minutes of fame are over at running for president again. And but you do look good. But I will tell you, as my wife says, he does look better with glasses.
Maybe with the glasses he can see what he's signing.
Yeah. Well, right now, when he said, I'm going to fight this indictment, blah, 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 whatever he said, he definitely was wearing rose-tinted glasses.
Right. Hey, Gary, did you follow this story at all?
You know, I did follow it. I really don't know the intricacies of the actual charge. I'm not sure what kind of teeth it has. I mean, certainly, you just never want to be indicted. I mean, the guy's charged with a felony, and now he has to disprove this charge against him. I think, I think it's just emblematic of what's happening right now. It's in some of these things that become a circular gunfight. Now, I don't know if this is a circular gunfight. Like, I really don't know if it is. I would think that the suing, which is not a criminal thing against the president, seems like it is a political stunt only because Obama has done far fewer executive orders than George W. did. So I don't know, but I think you have to be nice to the people on the way up so they don't bite you when you're up there and you don't see them on the way down. So I think it's got to be a gigantic headache for him. I have no I think Rick Perry is not the brightest and the best and the brightest that our country has to offer. Maybe in Texas he's the best and the brightest, but I just think that he's a very average guy. His IQ and his bandwidth is not that bright, but so be it.
You know, it used to be when a politician was indicted, that was they resigned right away. That was Republicans, Democrats. I mean, whatever. They fell on their swords and they just left office. Now it's like they wear like a badge of honor. We have a bunch of people here in Mahoning County, all indicted, major corruption scandal, and of course they're fighting it. And they stay in office, they collect a paycheck, they spend all their time, instead of working for the people, working on their case, you know, and because their cases are huge, the FBI is involved, the Attorney General's office is involved, this and that. It's like this all over the country when if you surf the Internet and see what people get indicted, politicians, and defiantly, you know, they shake their fist, and, the grand jury's wrong, the accusers are wrong. You know, I understand you're innocent until you're proven guilty, okay. Leave office, you've been indicted, or take a leave of absence, don't collect your paycheck, and go fight it on your time, not the taxpayer's time. And if you're found innocent again, if you find innocent or there was some sort of political witch hunt or things stacked against you, it will come out, and then you can collect, your money back or your job or whatnot. But this is ridiculous. I mean, Rick Perry is going to be focusing on getting revenge, winning his case, and whatnot, why this indictment is shaking out, and that's a waste of time and for the taxpayers. Step aside, leave us, go away, get off, exit stage left, exit stage right, whatever you got to do. I'm so sick of this at every level. You see it, it's like they wear an indictment like a badge of honor. They stand up and say, the law enforcement's got it out against me, and this and that, and it's just a sign of the times, as Gary said, that this just happens, and these politicians don't go away, even when they're indicted. And then with guilt, even if they're guilty, and they're found guilty, they're indicted. What, Simon, you'll love, and I know you know this, you're always bitching, rightfully so, about how much money Congress people make, and they only work 3 days a year when they work. How about you cannot go after these people's federal pensions? Or the state pensions or whatnot. They're found guilty. They commit all sorts of crimes in office that they couldn't commit if they weren't in office. And they get to keep their incredibly good health care and all their bennies. That can't be touched. They don't have to pay back. If they stole $1 million from the taxpayers, they don't have to pay any of it back. They get to keep their pension. It's sickening.
It really is unfortunate that Peter Haven is tied up this afternoon in a... doing some pre-trial stuff, because there's great legal aspect to this indictment. I think the thumbnail sketch is this DA, Rosemary Lemberg, got busted on a DUI, and one of her missions was to prevent government corruption. She headed up the headed up the task force, if you will, to do investigations. So Rick Perry turns around and says, okay, you need to go. If you don't resign, I'm going to cut $7 million of your funding. So your entire department is screwed.
This is because you got a DUI?
Yes.
Okay.
And so that's what it's all about. Like, he obviously wanted to get rid of Rosemary, and I see good reason. You know, or at least, you know, at face value. But he managed to tie it to a threat of veto on the Texas budget, and in fact, the threat he carried out. Right. So,
you know, Simon, I don't know if that's good reason. I mean, no one's going to be able to serve in office. I mean, George Bush did cocaine. Bill Clinton, I'm sure, did cocaine. I'm sure Obama admitted that he did cocaine. I mean, think about it, Simon. Let's say you were out to dinner with your wife and you had a .1, and it's a .08. And fine, listen, I'm very against drunk driving, but should you not be district attorney, number one? Should you lose a job that maybe you've been working on for your entire life to get? Going to law school, getting jobs, working cases, and all of a sudden, you know, it would be nice if Peter was here, but my guess is that the district attorney is an elected office in Texas. And so could someone just sit there and say, you're fired, I'm going to make your job irrelevant just because you have a DUI? I mean, and this goes, by the way, this goes on both sides of the aisle. This isn't a Democrat or Republican position, but when people have to be perfect and we want these people to be avatars of purity and wonderment and all these things, it's like all we get is these hucksters, these religious hucksters who preach, you know, Christianity and God is whispering in my ear every moment, and it's a bunch of crap. It's just an absolute bunch of crap that, and this is what we get, the Michelle Bachmans of the world. Let's have this purity test. So when you say, and I'm not blaming you, Simon, but you say for good cause, I don't know if that's for good cause. And that really worries me that we think that intuitively now. We've been so brainwashed that way.
Okay, the DUI, she was actually three times over the legal limit.
She was three times.
Three times.
2.4 and driving.
Yeah.
Okay, now, even then, I'm not certain that I want her out of office. I mean, that does add some context to it. But I don't know if she needs to go into a rehab program or something like that. I really don't know. That is disturbing, and that does change my view a little bit. But I think context is very important, meaning Obama wrote in his book that he used cocaine. And I'm sure most of the presidents in the recent past probably have used cocaine, probably did marijuana, maybe have done ecstasy, maybe have done some opiates. I've done drugs in my life. I could be president. I mean, I don't think that when someone says, well, Gary, you did cocaine in your past and you took acid a couple of times, that I shouldn't be president. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. No, but the point I was trying to make is that I can see a fair reason why Rick Perry might suggest that Rosemary might want to consider stepping down, but
fair enough.
I don't think it's fair for him to attach it to a veto of funding for the department that she ran.
Right.
What is her, first of all, when she was so blasted, was it when she had a wedding, when she had a graduation party? To me it's always, you know, if she was just sitting at a bar and pounding them down like that by herself, then I think there is a concern. But if she was coming for some great, you know, wedding celebration of somebody or this or that, you know, people tend to get to drink more at that in group settings. And I think everything always has to be looked at. Did anybody get killed or hurt? Was she in a car crash? Did she hurt anybody? You know, if all she did, you know, I think all these things have to play in. And to me, every OVI has a story, and you have to get to all of them. You know, but that's number one. Number two, obviously, to me, this woman's probably, when she's sober, she's probably a damn good DA. Probably has there's probably some corruption that she's knows about, is looking into, that Rick Perry or Rick Perry's buddies are probably tied into, and Perry thinking he could use this as an excuse in a state like Texas, pretty stupid, which goes to what Gary said, the guy's not the brightest bulb in the face of the earth. I think does reek of abuse of power. Is it an indictable? Is it going to get him thrown out of office? I was shocked he was indicted for it, but obviously in Texas state law, they try to do things like that to keep governors from having, super duper pooper scooper superhuman powers, and that's what's happened here, and that's what I believe it's probably about, without knowing all the Texas details and all that. Perry's been, Perry enjoyed, Perry was Butch's boy, and there was all sorts of, come on, let's face it, Texas is a crony state, where it always had been, LBJ. To go on and on and on, your little Bush.
Simon, Sam, I think you're wrong. I think George W. hates Rick Perry, and I think the whole Bush family hates Rick Perry. So
really?
I'm not sure that he's one of his acolytes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that.
I thought he was their guy. I thought because he was the lieutenant governor when Bush was governor.
I know, but I don't think that was Bush's choice.
Okay, I didn't know that. I don't. That's odd to me because he seems like he was, followed in Bush's bootsteps. When he was the governor.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. I don't know Texas. That's where you at all. But I do know about the good old boy network. We have it in Ohio. I'm sure you have it in California. It's got to exist in Texas. And obviously, sometimes when you get these really good DAs that this country needs, or a good attorney general, and they want to start on cleaning up the corruption, and the Rick Perry knows it's there. He's probably connected to it, or his friends are. This was his way to, obviously the grand jury saw it that way. This was his way to silence his critics, because she caught a buzz, and so she doesn't resign or step aside or remove herself from this investigation. He cuts her funding, and now he's been indicted. I think it's going to be a hell of a story. There's obviously more going on there than meets the eye, so I guess it'll play out. Again, I'm no fan of Rick Perry's. People love him because he wants to have he has the National Guard down there on the border. They're firing shots against the Rio Grande. He thinks he's Sam Houston, and he thinks Santa Ana's over on the other side. And I understand that the immigration thing is a whole other debate, and he's trying to make himself look like the real tough guy, and doing all that. And I've seen videos of his National Guard trading pot shots with the Mexican army or the illegals or whatnot, and it's a mess. And Rick Perry's probably not the guy to be helping to solve that problem. And if anything, he probably fans the fire of it to try to help himself score points with the wacko right.
And to answer your question about had she been to a graduation or a wedding, I have seen some footage of the traffic stop and the field sobriety test. And I would say if she'd been to a function, she had to have been the worst dressed person at it.
Is she good looking or is she not good looking?
She's not good looking.
That's it. She was at a bar hoping that some guy would have beer goggles, and she really had, and she was got trapped waiting because no one did. Aha, it all sums up now. So she's sitting at a bar and got sloshed, and it's all that. Well, yeah, then I think there was some, you know, there might, maybe she's got a problem. You know, to be three times over the legal limit in a state, when my son was serving down there in what's that huge in San Antonio? I can't remember the name, but my son did his basic training. It's in San Antonio. Anyway, one of the games they all play down there at the bars is they have a breathalyzer machine. And you get drunk, you start doing shots to see who blows the highest level. Now, that's legal in Texas at the bars. In Ohio, if you did that, the cops would come in, and being a former bar owner, they would come in, you know, they'd bust you, and you'd be in big trouble, as in most other states. But that's a drinking game in Texas. That's allowed, as long as you're not the guy driving home with a 3.7 blow thing. But, you know, with things like that, and let's face it, there is a, you know, huge military presence in Texas. So the drinking is, you know, it's part of the good old boy network, a good old boy way to do it down there. You know, you go out and you pound 30 beers or whatnot and get in your pickup truck and go, you know, and go do stuff. But, you know, so that's a lot, though, for a DA. I mean, you would think that...
Well, let me tell you what would really piss me off. What would really piss me off about this woman is if I found, if it comes to light that she's prosecuting people for, like, marijuana... For, like, using some kind of drugs, like someone using, having, like, a gram of cocaine in their, you know, in their car or something and confiscating their card and putting them in prison, or someone buys some weed and she gives them a felony conviction. If she's that kind of DA, then I want her out of office. I don't know that Rick Perry would do it the right way, and I'm not sure who's kettle and who's the pot with him. But that would infuriate me because I promise you, believe you me, my daughter was hit by a drunk driver. Thank God she was all right. But it was really chilling. I would rather a driver be on, you know, some lines of cocaine than on a 2.5 blowing on a car. And so what really kills me is the hypocrisy and the finger pointing and all this stuff just pisses me off.
You know, it's a very good point you bring up, and sometimes those DAs, let's say she's a closet big drinking alcoholic I'm just going to throw that out there, because obviously three times over the limit and getting in a car is pretty bad, okay, I think we all agree with that. And you're right, I bet you she threw the book more at what you just said about other drunk drivers. Maybe on the first offense, some marijuana things, this and that. You know, because of her hypocrisy, and that, she wouldn't be the first one, nor she'd be the last one. And that's an excellent point to bring up.
Okay, I think we're done with that story. Let's move on to the other interesting events this week, the ones that unfolded in Ferguson, Missouri. Michael Brown's death. Death by cop, Darren Wilson. Sam, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, by the way, I think I heard a rumor that someone the cop shot last night died. I don't know if that happened yet, but that was they confirmed that a person that they shot at last night after the curfew died. So now we're talking about two deaths. But the Michael Brown incident is just I don't know. You know, the only reason I'm very saddened by the great Robin Williams dying. He's a genius. I love him. People say I look like him. I've been stopped. I used to say yes, I'm Robin Williams. I'm here doing a movie. Don't tell anybody. And you know, things of that nature, and that's a compliment. The guy was a cop. His death knocked off all the crap that's been going on in this country and around the world for two nights. So, Robin Williams, I know you're up there with Jonathan Winters practicing your stick, but, you know, I'm sorry you went too soon, but thank you for knocking all the crap in this world off the front page and the television for two days, and I could see tributes to him, which weren't even good enough, considering his genius ability. But anyway, when I did watch it, I was floored by two things, and there's still more coming out about the killing, which happened Friday. I was shocked, three things. One, that Ferguson, as you said, Mississippi, or Ferguson, Alabama, which it should be, it's happening in today, the year 2014, that a city, a little suburb that's 70% African American, only has one elected official who's black, only has three police officers and no firefighters. So this has got to be institutional racism at its worst in this community. And then, of course, the police department and the idiotic chief who came up looked like Bull Connor for all I could. The only thing missing was the red man tobacco in his mouth. I was amazed. I mean, I thought I went back. I was in a history book watching the Alabama and Mississippi burning back from the Civil Rights Movement with the way these guys acted and what they said. Then the killer was the tanks, the armored personnel carriers, the machine gun, the helmet. I go. Did the military just invade St. Louis? You know, the only good thing I can say about the hardware being there is it was less tanks for ISIS to get their hands on in Iraq that are in Ferguson, Missouri. A show of force like that, I'm wondering that there were riots all over America with that happening. That was unbelievable, uncalled for, probably added to the deaths, probably added to the made people who have been victims of racism even more angry, more pissed off, and it was unbelievable that our Pentagon for decades has been beefing up our local police departments to the point that's their arm to the teeth. And the other thing is, they don't know how to deal with it. Because the third thing I want to talk about is that boy's body lied in the street for hours, I understand. No one threw a blanket or a tarp over. People were videotaping it. I don't know. And it looked like the cops, because all they know how to do is hand out parking tickets and OVIs and things of this nature, are not trained for this sort of catastrophe and emergency. And obviously in Ferguson, Missouri, they're not. That's obviously, they did not know how to handle it. And now the government, everything's happened too late. And of course, then you have the people, the other day they're letting, on Friday, what was it? You had, on one hand, you had the local police shooting, and the looting was going on, which always seemed to take place during these events. Gee, I wonder why. Because they can. Because they're pissed off, they're angry, they don't have anything. That's the big, huge issue here. They're getting back at the system. There's no excuse for rioting, looting, but it's going to happen when you have incidents like this. I don't know why people are so surprised by it. And the racism of that community, and it's in St. Louis, is mind-boggling to me. I've been floored by it. And then the poison the jury pool on Friday with the release of the video of the kid stealing the cigars, allegedly pushing somebody, and the cop who shot him didn't know that he was a robbery suspect. He just had stopped him for walking in the middle of the road, being arrogant or whatever he was. Slowly walking, slow traffic, and then he stopped, and then they have this going on. It's just mind-boggling. But what boggles my mind more is the show of force that I believe is totally unnecessary, given the tragedy amongst with this kid getting shot. And once again, you have to almost fear the cover-up. The prosecutor... The prosecutor dealing with it. They didn't release the cop's name right away. They'll come up with a thing. Officer Field for his life. Struggled with suspect. Shot suspect multiple times. Suspect was 6'4", 300 pounds, and took a long time to die, so he had to shoot him a couple more times. And there'll be a cover-up, and that's what's going on. And I understand the anger of the African-American community there.
Gary, I'd like your comment on something Sam said The militarization of police. Is this where the country's headed? You know, every small town needs a tank?
Yes. Yes, it is definitely where it's headed, Simon, unfortunately. And it doesn't seem like you can do anything about it. You know, it's we're becoming, we just have a microscope against anything that's negative, anything that could be hurtful to us, and we're just getting more and more fearful. This is basically the NRA's weaponry, you know, the idea of the big government. And the government needs all this protection because everyone's armed to the teeth. So the problem is, you know, we're all carrying, you know, AK-47s. We're all carrying 50 caliber round ammunition. We're all carrying, I'm not saying we all, but a lot of people are carrying 100 magazines for their semi-automatic guns. And so it's like everyone's like freaked out. You have something happen in Newtown, and the answer is not to get rid of the firepower, but to get more people with guns. Let's give the teachers guns, and let's give an armed security person in every school. And we're just becoming more and more paranoid, more and more fearful, and it's like this overarching thing. I know this sounds totally tangential, and it is, but, you know, I gotta bathe myself in antibacterial soap because, God forbid, something bad happens to me. I've got to, you know, go to Walmart with a long gun on my back in case someone is going to rob me. And so now, you know, what are the police going to do? Obviously, I think Sam is absolutely right. The optics were absolutely horrible. But if you think about it, if you don't know what's out there, you just don't know what's out there. You don't know if the person that you're encountering could have a gun, a semi-automatic, that could literally just rip through your Kevlar vest and go out the backside and shoot and kill someone behind you. So, like, what are the police officers supposed to do when you don't know, when your enemy has weaponry that could totally just take you out in a moment? I don't condone it. I think it's horrible. I think it's awful, but I just think, like, it's the NRA has created the problem. The bellicose nature of our country has created the problem. The fact that we are a bloodthirsty country, we love violence of all sorts, that it's now it's starting, that whole idea is basically cannibalizing our entire nation and our entire psychology, where we're only going to feel safe if we're only carrying weapons and guns and whatever. And it's very, very sad and very, very depressing in my view.
Can I interject something? And you made some good points, Gary. Simon,
yep.
And Gary, if everybody was armed like you said they were, Gary, why were the rioters only throwing rocks and really crappy made of Molotov cocktails? They're not as armed. Like, the bad guys are not as armed like, yeah, there are certain gangbangers are, the Bloods, the Crips. People, they're armed to the teeth, okay? They have AK-47s, which you assault all the time. You see that. Most people don't, because my handgun I have in my house for my protection, I couldn't stand up to the lone police officer in my town because he's got a shotgun, he's got a machine gun, he's probably got a bazooka, and probably has a tactical nuclear weapon that he could use. I'm serious. They're armed to the teeth. It's incredible. And if more people had weapons like you think, like you're referring to, why weren't there raging gun battles in the street? Because, boy, they had 150 people who were pissed off beyond belief, and they weren't. And I go back to this. I don't think as many people have guns as some people want, as the cops want you to believe it, but they want you to believe that so they can get these tanks, get these armored guns, you know, get these personnel, have a bigger budget, et cetera, et cetera. It's always about getting more money. And also, I also think most of those people in a town that's so institutionally racist and those people victim, that's why you saw the looting. That's
Sam, you may be right.
Getting a bag of diapers and a couple cans of food were more important than looting the gun store and getting guns. Because that's what normally happens.
You may be right, but if you're a cop, You don't know, and I'm not defending them. I'm just saying, if the weapons weren't there, if you couldn't get 50 caliber long guns and semi-automatic long guns that you could carry around the street, then the police departments wouldn't need these incredible militarized things, because what you have accessible to the public. I'll give you your point that it's not maybe as prevalent in this small town as maybe it was or other places even. But if you don't know, and the people, the citizens, can get weaponry of war wherever they want at the local Walmart, when I was growing up back in Bedrock, I knew that the police department could totally outgun anybody. Not anymore. You could buy online a Kevlar vest. You could buy silencers. You could sit there and buy, you know, military weapons.
I'm not debating that. But why didn't the rioters, when they rioted Walmart last week, go get guns?
I don't know. That wasn't my point. No. But that wasn't my point. What Simon was saying is, why are you having these incredible military police officers, which I think is abhorrent? I'm saying, in my guess, they have to make the rational decision that we don't know, and if 4% or 5% of the population has militarized weaponry, we have to protect ourselves. And since they're putting themselves in harm's way, they're coming to a dangerous situation. I would want that if I was a police officer. I mean, it's a horrible statement of fact.
Okay, no, I'm not debating. Look, it's a great debate and it needs to keep going on, okay? But the militarization of our police forces, can you imagine what the big cities have? I mean, it's a small little city, 53 police officers. We saw it. I mean, when I'm looking at protests, which have started out peacefully for the most part, staring at, something going to piss me off is some cop with a mounted 50 caliber machine gun on an armored personnel carrier. Now I'm threatened. I'm trying to protest with my hands up because you just shot one of our citizens, it appeared to be a cover up. The cops handled it terribly, and I believe they handled it terribly because that community, that police department, is probably one of the most rigged. I guarantee you. I hope that they were busting reporters. How about the Washington Post and Huffington Post reporters that were harassed? I mean, obviously, this community, those cops, that mayor, 6 out of 7 council people, the fire department, stay in power by running it like Bull Connors and George Wallace did. They are a testament to institutional racism and whatnot that I thought was long ago gone. That I am shocked that, I mean, can you believe
really
a community with 70% blacks that only has one elected official? It should be the opposite way around. It's not. There's something wrong there. Are they intimidated in that vote? Are they not part of the process? There is something that needs to be looked at and looked at deeply in that community by that governor, by a Blue Ribbon campaign. Hopefully the feds will come in and investigate this, because there's something seriously wrong in that community, because it's totally against the grain of what I know happened. If you go to the community, that's like my town, where I live, we have 3,000 people in our village, okay?
By the way, it's going to get worse as the disparity between the income discrepancy gets and people are getting less and less and the wealthy goes to fewer and fewer.
I think
it's just going to be a lot of unrest, and it's going to be really crazy. And then, of course, the NRA is going to say, you have to get more and more weapons. And the reason why the police department is militarized is a mirror of the public. Since the public gets to be militarized, of course, the police department. I agree with everything you're saying about what's going on with racism out there. I think I was just responding to what Simon said about police departments that are militarized around the country. I think they almost have to be, as sad as that is. Because the citizens have weapons of war. But so if the citizens have weapons of war, you have to be able to counter that.
But don't need that in a police. If that's true, Gary, okay, I'm not debating that you're not right about that. What do we need a National Guard for, and what do we need a military for? Why not just have a giant, why not just have a, your local police department double as everything?
Well, that's a different that's a different topic. If I'm a police officer, if I'm pulling the streets, and if it is accessible to the citizens to have a semi-automatic 50 caliber weaponry that can go through a vehicle and go out the other side and kill everyone in, you have to sit there and be able to sit there and patrol the streets that could counter what the weapons of the bad guys are. And I think it's horrid that's the case. I would say that any kind of automatic, I mean, you know how I feel about guns. If you want to have a gun, you got to register it. You could buy one or two guns, that's it. Any kind of automatic weapon should be at a shooting range and lock and key. When you come and go, it's got to stay there. But that's not the case. I could go out today and buy 15 semi-automatic weapons and 50,000 rounds of ammunition. And a cop comes to my door not knowing who I am, what are they going to do if it was your boy at the door wearing a Kevlar vest? It's bizarre. It's a horrid idea, a horrid thought. But what are you going to do if you're a police officer?
Answer me this. I'm going to wave my magic wand, and I'm going to get rid of all the automatic weapons in people's hands. They are allowed to have one shotgun, one pistol, whatever. Okay, I agree with that.
Yes.
Do you think the cops will demilitarize?
Yes.
Okay, I disagree with you. What about you, Simon?
Oh, I don't think they will. But here's a question.
They will not. This has been going on for years. They're going to get drones. Cops now, due process begins and ends when that cop steps out of a car now. And that's why relationships between police, at least in our community, I don't know about yours in L.A., Simon, I don't know about yours, are at its all-time low point right now because people see what they're about. They're trample on the rights. You know, people talk about, the Republicans talk about, you know, Obama doesn't abide by the Constitution. Well, they're the party of law and order, just as, that's how Richard Nixon got elected in 1968. They're the ones behind this, building up this huge police state, militarization of a police state. Obviously, the Pentagon under the Obama administration has followed along with what Bush and Clinton and Big Bush and Reagan have been doing. You know, instead of destroying these weapons, extra tanks and this and that, we've been giving them to... we've been giving them to the police departments, or they've been buying them, and the war merchants love it, obviously, and that's the biggest reason why we got rid of all our automatic weapons, Gary. The war merchants were never going to allow the police to disarm. And by the way, Michael Brown was unarmed. We know that. Cops kill more people than people kill cops. I think that's a given, too. Statistics bear that out. Most people with guns that are thugs, as they like to say, are shooting each other in gang-related warfare for control of money. And I do agree with what you said, Gary. This is becoming, the looting happens because that's the only way they can get something, that they're being ripped off, they're not being properly represented. And this is Ferguson. That's what's under the microscope right now. Their police department or their chief look like a total bull con, is idiot. He should be fired immediately. And, they're just on offer. When he had the line, we only have 3 African-Americans because it's really tough to pass the test or something like that, or he said some stupid remark like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. Why aren't you reaching out? Your community is 70% black. Why hasn't the mayor, the majority of council, and the police said, hey, we've got to diversify here? You know, maybe if they had more African-Americans on the force, or females or whatever, they'd have a better community relationship. Because obviously the police and the institutions in that community have a horrible relationship with the people.
Okay. We've been talking about the race card, and clearly it's in play in this case. Did either of you... I had seen the news that the one and only Al Sharpton is sticking his nose in. He flew in and created havoc as he loves to do. Well, why doesn't the guy just butt out?
Good, Gary.
Not an Al Sharpton fan, and I don't know. It's really kind of shows you the dearth of a Martin Luther King, someone out there that could really speak for the African American community. The fact that Al Sharpton's got a show on MSNBC is outrageous to me. But you know, I think a lot of black people are upset that he's there, shouting and with his rhymes wherever they are. I just don't think he's. I don't think he has a resume. I don't think he has the gravitas that really needs to be a thoughtful, intelligent person who can get up there and really be helpful. So it's too bad. It's. I don't know. Whenever I see him, I kind of change the channel.
Right. I tend to do the same thing.
Yeah. You know what the real guilty party here, and you just brought it up, Gary? MSNBC is the guilty party. Now, I know they're doing this for ratings, not for the money is, but why would you give him a show? And if he wants to be a rabble-rouser, then he shouldn't be able to be both. Go be a rabble-rouser, Al, but you can't have a radio show, or you can't have a television show and be biased. You know, you can't report, but no one wants reporters anymore. We want repeaters. We want entertainers. We want, you know, we don't want that. So I guess maybe because of that, that's why MSNBC has him. I can't believe he went out there. Obviously, he's an agitator from way back. He's very good at it. He agitates the hell out of me. Obviously, you two guys too. And I think he's, you know, he'll just fan the fires. I mean, it's a big issue for a guy like Kim and some others. You know, there's money to be made, you know, T-shirts to be sold, and you know, all that stuff, and that nature. I am glad that the, you know, I think the governors look like a bozo. They all have. I mean, they've just been told this has been totally mismanaged, you know, either they're protecting the. Like, I think Friday night, one night they burnt down, they tried to burn down the whole town, and then the cops came in over-aggressively. And the other night, they let them burn everything down, and the cops didn't do anything. That's what I've been hearing. So you talk about total mismanagement of a bad thing. These guys are the poster boys for it, the ones who are in charge of Ferguson, Missouri. And I think it's going to get uglier.
Oh, okay. Let me produce more, Sam. All right, Michael Brown, 18 years old, probably a petty thief, but unarmed. Darren Wilson, 28 years old, most definitely armed. If Darren Wilson was a civilian, let's say he was driving down the street and saw this pair of shady-looking characters and shot one of them several times, wouldn't he be behind bars?
Absolutely. I mean, if you listen to the eyewitness accounts, not only did he get shot unarmed, he had his hands up in the air, and the police officer followed him and shot him a couple more times just to make sure he was, you know, adding insult to injury. And right now, that's what we have to go by because everyone else is mum, and they're too mum. And I'm a cynical person. And I smell a conspiracy building here to protect a thin blue line. But yeah, absolutely. And you know, and the interesting thing was when they showed that video Friday to poison, to almost justify the justifiable homicide, or you know, to poison the jury pool, or whatever you want to say, because they also admitted that the police officer didn't know he was a robbery suspect. He allegedly was out in the street walking slowly, so the police officer couldn't have rolled down his window and said, "Hey, Michael, can you get out of the street? You know, it's not safe." There's something strange about the story, you know. I mean, it just, you know, and I'm sure the truth will come out. And but I agree with you. You know, he would be behind bars, and that would be it.
And Gary, would you be in agreement with us?
If the way you described it, of course, unless his name was Zimmerman,
I was waiting for one of you to bring that up.
His name was Zimmerman. But again, you see, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I just previously said. But I really don't know what happened. I mean, the way you described it, if his hands were up and then he followed him and he shot him two more times, then I hope the guy goes to prison.
Gary, that's one of the eyewitness accounts. Maybe the guy was lying.
But the eyewitness account was his friend, and you don't know. Just like the girl who said the lacrosse team raped her and then she was found out to be lying. I'm not saying that this person's wrong at all, but I don't know that it's true.
Okay.
It could be, I think the police officer said that he was struggling for his gun and he reached for his gun. And that's what happened. So I honestly don't know, and I just don't want to sit there and be part of, the sharks that see blood in the water and just make all these assertions. What I like to go for when I think about these things, again, is this idea of this paranoia, this idea of this. It's just a very sad state of affairs where we're all just kind of stressed out. We don't know who's packing heat, who doesn't pack heat. It's us against them. If it's as you're saying, and I wouldn't be surprised at all, when you go down to this part of the country, there's a lot of bubbas out there. There's a lot of institutional racism. I have no idea what it would be like to be a black man living in that part of the world where, you know, I guess you grow up and you're told, you know, you look down like a beaten dog, you don't make eye contact, you say yes sir, yes ma'am, and you're on your way. I think that if that were the case, it's just quite horrifying. It's part of our the fabric of our country, and it's quite sad. And again, I think it just feeds into a lot of paranoia and a lot of bloodthirstiness that represents a population at large.
But there's another thing that bothers me. It took the police six days to actually name the officer involved. But have you all noticed that there are no pictures of the guy? Now, again, if it was a civilian, his mugshot would be plastered all over the press. Has either of you noticed this?
Yes. I don't like the fact that the local district attorney is handling this case. I think the federal government should have stepped in right away and told everybody, get out of the way. We're going to handle this thing, the autopsy, whatnot. I think they're trying to. They're being stymied by this local DA, who another person asked to step aside for the state attorney general, and he won't do it. I think his name is McCulloch or something. And, you know, he obviously sees this as a political stepping stone, probably, ambitious, probably, and this and that. And I think the whole thing was handled terribly. And this is what I said. I saw that kid, that boy's body. You know, he's dead, okay? The facts will come out how he was killed later on, and we may be surprised, we may not be surprised. But for hours, laying in the middle of the street where they had some yellow tape strung up, and no one knew what to do or didn't want to do anything. I cannot believe and fathom that in the year 2014, that police departments, fire departments, EMS, the political subdivision there, didn't have that body removed ASAP, so no one could act, to a place where it could be properly stored until an autopsy could be performed and whatnot. It just laid there in front of everybody. You talk about wanting a perfect light of a match for a riot. It's right there. The crowds are gathering. They see the dead of fellow member of the race just lying there. They don't know what happened. They know he's dead and just bleeding there. And I'm watching these. It's just incredible. It's obviously to me they did not know how to respond to this. So that's why I'm not shocked they didn't name the name, because they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. You know, when they sure, as you pointed out, Simon, slyly, I may add, they sure know how to treat a citizen when they commit a crime, allegedly, like shit, and drag your name through the mud, put your picture on the mud, your mug television, and do all that sort of stuff, and have them tried in the press and whatnot. But when it's one of their own, or it's a politician, one of their own, they circle the wagons. It sure comes across that way. I may be wrong, but it sure comes across that way, because we've seen other police officers shoot people. Their names are immediately released. Pictures are immediately released. A whole full-scale investigation starts that people are happy with, just so these riots don't take place and things of that nature. If the councilman, the mayor, and the police chief, they want to know why all this is happening, they should look in the damn mirror, because they've done a terrible job at this crisis management.
And Gary, were you surprised that no picture has been released?
The picture of the officer?
Police officer, yes.
Yeah. You know, Simon, it really doesn't bother me. I don't have this kind of need to know. I think, and again, I'm not too up on it. I guess this is a relatively smaller community. I think they really had to take steps to make sure this officer was safe, that his family was safe. They were out of the city, perhaps for a while. I thought maybe if they did it right away, these people would probably march on their home and they might get hurt. So I don't know. I don't. You know, it's like it's so interesting. It would really bother me if it was never revealed, which never happens. It would come out, and I knew it would come out in time. Again, I think the optics were horrible. I think the optics of the body lined in the street for hours and all these things, and the way it was handled, I think it very easily could have been very much of a racist position, although I honestly don't know. But as far as what you're bringing up in particular, that doesn't bother me. I'm not sitting here, who was it? His name was Daryl as opposed to, you know, Kevin. Like, okay, so I don't know what that means to me, but if I'm this guy's wife or son or daughter or brother or mother or father, I want to get out of town. And I want to make sure that my family and myself are safe. Because what if it turns out that he was
innocent? But they don't do that. They don't provide that service for a citizen that they accuse of involved in this. And I think Simon's point is well taken. I understand what you're saying. But to me, it's you've got to treat no one's above the law, Gary. And this police department, this particular police department and its political subdivision of councilman and mayor definitely thought that. When I saw that bullshit line that Bull Connor of Ferguson, Missouri, talked about, oh, we were worried about social media threats, so today's social media, we can't release his name, that's baloney. Because the very minute a citizen in that community commits a crime, they know everybody. They smear that person's name all over the place, just like every other community does. And they try them in the public. And so when it's one of their own, oh, no. And that helped the riots take place. I understand what you're saying about the safety of the family. They could have moved the family to a hotel in Kalamazoo, okay, while this is playing out. But everyone should have known the facts, and because they didn't, they have contributed. They are a contributing factor to the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri.
Why? Because they didn't know the guy's name.
Yes,
that's why there was unrest. Come on,
that's one of the reasons.
I mean, the name came out like 3 days later, like big deal.
6 days later.
All right. Well, does that mean that's why there's unrest, because you didn't know the person's name?
That was one of the reasons. Yes, that's one of the reasons, and I think it's pretty legitimate.
I think if it was the reason, it must have been a very small reason. I think the reason, as you rightly said, this poor unarmed kid is dead. The body's laying there for hours on end. It's a very white position in a very dark community. Of course, it's a tinderbox. I get it. I don't think that the reason why they did this is because I'm just specifically answering Simon's question about
the
name.
It's part of the. It's part of the reason this took place is because they did not release the name. There was almost like a, hey, forget about Michael Brown. We have to protect our own fellow officer first. Then we'll get to Michael Brown later. And it came across that way. And if they would have released the name and had more transparency.
But you can't release the name in the same way. You just can't. You just can't say in 5 minutes,
all
oh, yeah, Daryl Evans.
All other police shootings that have taken place over the last
are you sure?
20 years. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong.
I don't know. Then if that's the case, then I'm wrong. If that's the case, then I'm very
wrong. I believe most police departments, that's the policy.
I have no idea. I really don't know.
Simon,
if that's
you know?
The case, then...
This is the first time that I can recall where it has taken 6 days to release a name, and we are still waiting for a photograph. I've never heard of this before.
Well, then maybe there's something to be said about that. Maybe I could be wrong. My only instinct was
I
would want his family to be safe.
Gary, I don't think it's the only reason. I just think it's one of those, you know, riots happen for all sorts of reasons. You know, the number one reason is absolutely we're all on the same page. The unarmed black kid was killed, lying in the streets, and it was just one foobar after another with this police department and the political people who run it and dealing with it. And, of course, that just fanned the fires, and that's all you need. Boy, I mean, in a tinderbox like that, you want to be careful about everything. And that's what I don't understand. It seems like the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department was more hyped up on getting every toy from the Pentagon, but not taking sensitivity training and some other things that they probably should have, or how to deal in crisis management, riots, and whatnot. They'd probably be better off doing that than learning how to drive a damn tank.
Right. Okay. Now, Sam, a subject that you touched on earlier, and it definitely hit a nerve with me. Earlier this week, a Huffington Post reporter, and I believe it was a Washington Post reporter.
That's correct.
Got themselves arrested. They weren't involved in anything. They were sitting in the McDonald's using their laptops, writing stories. What did you make of that story?
I think that just goes hand in hand with this institutional racism of this particular community. Did not like having any criticism, which is why I believe African Americans are probably scared to death to get involved in this community, to try to take over politically from, you know, the way you're supposed to. I bet you half the stuff is half the stuff. 99% of everything's hushed up in this community, and to the point that if anybody speaks out, they're arrested, they're roughhoused, they're branded, they're thrown out of the community. I mean, it's right out of a bad movie. And when you take a Washington Post reporter and basically shove them up against the wall when they're doing their job, and they were both sitting there tweeting their tweets out about the riots as it was building up. Because the cops didn't like what they were saying. That means one of those cops or someone at that police station or the mayor's office or the councilman were watching what these people were saying. You know what I mean? They had to be watching, reading what these reporters were writing because they were identified, picked up, they were found, and they got them at the McDonald's, and they roughed them around, and then they arrested them. And I hope the Huffington Post and Washington Post use their asses.
Okay, yeah, here's the other interesting thing. Earlier today, I watched an interview with the HuffPo reporter, and the cops refused to give their names. Now, I think that is scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other scary thing was I saw the Washington Post reporter. He said... It was his impression, and he's a reporter, so I got to respect his opinion. He worked for the Washington Post. He wasn't working for the Youngstown Vindicator, okay? And he said he was shocked that the people, he seemed that the people he was in jail were all the peaceful ones, all the reporters, all the ones who were trying to calm everything down, but they all were positions of authority, a reverend. A store owner, a business person, an African American, of course, and that they were the ones who all arrested. The ones that you didn't think would be behind bars, the thugs, the ones looting, throwing Molotov cocktails and whatnot, were not. And I think the police were sending a message to these middle class African Americans, the clergy, this community organizer, and whatnot, is well, how would you if you do the wrong thing after this is over. you're going to be in jail. We're going to find something to put you in jail with. I know that that to me was passive aggressive, and that's what cops are about. I mean, again, just listening to the Washington Post reporter describing the type of people who was in jail with that night, it just was, and I was like, wait a minute, you know, that doesn't make any sense, but it does if you think of what this police department is about and how they've shown themselves. Look, how many times have you ever seen a United States governor basically fire the local police department and bring in the state highway patrol because the local police don't know what they're doing? That's a huge statement in itself.
Right. I don't know if you caught the video clip of the Al Jazeera film crew getting tear gas.
I saw a film clip from an independent last night. There was filmed independent reporters. They were behind the police. I saw that. I did not see them getting tear gas, though.
It was an Al Jazeera film crew who had talked to the cops, and the cops said, you can film from here. You don't want to get any closer. You know, you'll be safe here. So they set up their gear, and the next thing you know, there's a couple of tear gas canisters aimed at them, and I believe some rubber bullets. Now, the clips I've seen, which were not filmed by Al Jazeera, that they were filmed by other folks that happened to be around, Al Jazeera was minding their own business, that there were no other people around. I looked at it, and I was just in shock. You know, the riot was happening a mile away, you know, in the opposite direction. But no, there's a film crew. Too lazy to rough them up. Let's just toss a couple of tear gas grenades their way. Huh. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Gary, any thoughts on that?
I think it's pretty hideous. You know, as a psychologist, I try to think like what's going through their minds and what's going on when, you know, the dark just gets darker and darker and, you know, the uglier side of yourselves just come out. And it's really, it just seems like it's just very, very fearful, and they just want everyone to go away. And it's like the more they try to get people to go away and just to shut up and leave them alone, I think it only, you know, makes the problem way, way, way worse, way more toxic. It pollutes everything. And I think people, rightly so, they're outraged over this. I mean, I would be outraged. This idea that I'm in a McDonald's and I'm just typing something up, and someone, because they have a gun and because they have a badge, gets to tell me to do something. It's dehumanizing, and it's awful, and it's an awfully helpless feeling. So, you know, look, on a macro basis, we're so divided as a country. We're so divided politically. We're so divided spiritually. It just seems that we're coming apart at the seams. That we're all stressed out. We're all fearful. We think that we don't know who's ISIS and who's not ISIS. And God forbid that ISIS comes out here and there's some people out here who are doing those kind of terrorist things. Everyone's going to be pat down. Our entire way of life is in danger because it's just like no one could get hurt. You know, God forbid something happens. Everyone's going to want to be armed. Because a supermarket was blown up by an Islamic militant or something. So it's a very depressing, upsetting, It's just really just quite sad what's happening to our country and the world in general. It's kind of a frightening and depressing place right now.
It is indeed. I'm looking at the clock. There's a couple more subjects that I'd love to try and cram in this afternoon. Ukraine continues to simmer. Rumors have it that two armored convoys from Russia, one of personnel, one of rocket launchers, have moved into eastern Ukraine. I can't see this as being anything helpful in, quietening the situation down. Can you, Sam?
Well, it's interesting, Simon, you brought that up, because I could have sworn Thursday or Friday morning the Ukrainian government said they destroyed a armored division of Russian light tanks and troops coming in, and then that disappeared off the face of the earth. But they were bragging that they had their artillery destroyed some Russian light tank armored column, and then there was no confirmation or denial of that. Then you have the white trucks coming in, the Trojan horse, I call it, right? coming into to that, and look. It's August. It's 100 years ago World War I started with an assassination of the Duke Franz Ferdinand, the Emperor Joseph's nephew, and no one thought that was going to spark World War I, but it did. And it was in that area, nationalism, and here we are again. And it's almost the same players, it's not. You guys have already said it. It's a depressing, rotten, horrible times we're living in our own country. It's worse overseas. I'm so afraid that the one spark's going to be lit, the wrong assassination. I thought it was going to be this plane that was shot down was going to set off World War III. The way it was, everybody was not responding, or responding, or over responding and under responding, but it didn't. And now look at us. As we pointed out many times, if Putin wants the Ukraine, let him have it. Why should we be there? I mean, look at us in Iraq. We're back there again. They're back. Here we are. We're back in Iraq again. And now they're talking. I'm watching Democrats actually asking that we're going to put boots on the ground. On the talk shows today, I just changed the station. I can't listen to this. We got the Dem agreeing with John McCain because of the threat of ISIS and of course Putin's gonna. I'm 75% sure Vlad Putin is gonna take over Ukraine. And there's nothing we can do about it.
It doesn't bother me at all, Simon. I think that the war that needs to be looked at is the war against the Islamists, militants, and everybody else. And if I'm not saying that the citizens of Ukraine are radical Muslims or not. But I think that, and I'm not saying that anyone should be taken over or killed because of their faith, but I think that what is happening, and I said this last week, I think Russia, U.S., China should need to come together in a secular way and figure out what to do with this problem, because it is a very serious problem as far as a nation state going into another state. I think that's not the issue. I think the issue is, what do we do about the radicalized Islamist world and their need to destroy everything that's Western? And I think that is the thing that we have to worry about.
And I do want to move on to that. But before I do, Sam, a question for you.
Okay.
Have you heard the reports that Putin is sucking up to Cuba? He's forgiven an $18 billion debt, and apparently in return, they're going to let him reactivate a spy base.
No, I had not, but it doesn't surprise me one bit. As I've said many times, why we're not trading with Cuba is beyond me. I just don't understand that. I've been to Little Havana in Florida, wonderful place. People were great, great shops, great restaurants. People have a work ethic. I think that if it would open up marketplaces for people for both countries, it'd be a great thing. It'd probably be a great resort area. It'd probably have another casino, second to none. My dad, after we served in World War II and was shipped back from the European theater on his way to the Japanese theater until Truman dropped the bomb, was stationed in Cuba. Now, back then in the 40s, they had, you know, the Hotel National, you know, the Mafia had a couple of hotels there, and there was gambling and this and that. And he said it was the most beautiful place, Havana on the beaches and whatnot, was the most beautiful place he'd ever been to. He didn't go into the back areas where I'm sure there was poverty and this and that, but he said it was incredible, you know, and beautiful, well done, and the people were great and this and that. And again, this is a 22-year-old soldier on his way back from, you know, from Europe, on his way back to, you know, hopefully not having to serve in Japan. But anyway, I would love to see it. I'm not surprised that Putin's doing that. I'm surprised that the United States is not, especially, you know, given a guy like Obama, you would think would have been, given his personality, what he was about, would have opened up trade with Cuba, especially with Fidel getting older and sick. I think it was a perfect opportunity. But obviously, there's big money involved. People want, because Castro nationalized everything. You got all these people, all these corporations who want their dough. The mafia probably wants their piece of the gambling casinos, and so nothing gets done. So why not? Why shouldn't they? It's a poor country. Why shouldn't they reach out to Russia and Russia say, "Hey, we'll help you." Quid pro quo. That's what good trading is. So I'm not surprised by it.
Right. Okay, Gary, you mentioned ISIS. U.S. has once again managed to get itself embroiled in Iraq. Now, right now, it's only airstrikes to push ISIS back or hold them at bay. But is this a good move, or should we just get the hell out of the region and let Harry Carey be committed?
I'm kind of an uneducated or unenlightened position on this, but I'm kind of for the airstrikes. I think that what they're doing is basically genocide, which is horrible, and I think what we did as a country in stirring up that hornet's nest, we do owe something. On the ground, I'm not a big fan, and I think wars in the future, I think Obama has it right. You do drones, you do special ops, you don't do hundreds of thousands of soldiers. It's really fascinating, Simon, that, you know, now we're on the side of Assad and we're on the side of Iran. And it just goes to show that when, you know, all these people make these other people, Iran bogeymen, like, oh, yes, Iran's so horrible. And, okay, fine, I'm not saying they're good actors here. Or when you say, like, Assad is, oh, my God, Assad, we should support the rebels. Like, all those people like McCain and all these people are saying, send arms. Well, you know, that's like sending arms to bin Laden during the Russian-Afghanistan invasion. It's really a problem. It's kind of like a game of whack-a-mole right now. I don't know how this ends up. Trying to get nation states out of hyper-religious people is very difficult to do. I honestly don't know the answer, but as far as trying to prevent genocide, having some moral idea of what to do based on us invading a country that we had no business invading, that was living relatively peacefully, like I said last time, it's going to go on the ash heap of history as one of the most biggest geopolitical blunders. And now we have to do something to protect these people, these poor people.
Sam, would us arming the Kurds help or hinder? And remember for one moment that we've armed almost everyone over the past 30 years.
Well, We already armed them. They got their asses kicked. Yes, the airstrikes are probably going to help because ISIS doesn't have an air force. That doesn't mean they might not have missiles. I mean, could you imagine if they have a shoulder launched missiles and they take down one of our planes and the pilot's captured? Can you imagine what type of headache that would be for everybody? I thought for sure. I saw those people, only bits and pieces of it, of those 100,000 people trapped on a mountain. I think there was more to that. ISIS is just coming through like a plague in the Bible, beheading everybody. They're horrible. That's what they believe. They're going to kill everybody. Gary used the word genocide. I thought the world, whether it was Russia, China, the United States, the U.S., Britain, France, that created a corridor, if that had to put boots on the ground for that moment of time to get those people to safety and then leave, that would have been okay. I would have no problem with that. To sit back and watch these people be starved, systematically starved to death or whatnot, you know, that's what I believe the United States should be. When there's a tragedy like that, we lead, we help people, put them away, and we stay out of that. You know, and because that was genocide, as I said, Gary correctly pointed out. And most of those are kids. They're harmless. Except, you know, they don't want to convert. They probably don't know what, you know, that is. And it was just terrible. I saw the CNN video of the 80 people trying to get on the helicopter. And all I could think about was the Vietnam War. When I was 12 years old, watching the Vietnam War come to an end with a helicopter on top of the U.S. embassy with people dying to get into the helicopters to get to the aircraft carrier, and then the aircraft and the helicopters being pushed overboard because there were so many people on it. And I just thought about how heart-wrenching that was back then as a kid watching it on CBS News, Walter Cronkite, of course. And now I'm seeing these people like that all over again. It's like deja vu all over again, different place, and I really believe our military acting with others had an opportunity and an obligation, to do a real humanitarian effort, rescue all those people. We didn't. We used that as an excuse to start airstrikes, and we're going to be back into this place militarily again, and that's something I'm against because we can't win there. You can't let them kill each other. You said it, Simon. Hit the Harry Carey. They'll all form a circular firing squad and let them all kill each other. I mean, that's what they want, you know. I mean, I'm not one of those guys like McCain says, you know, today Iraq, tomorrow Mississippi. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think they just they want to. If that's what these people want to do, we already screwed up once, as Gary pointed out. We're gonna do it again. I understand humanitarian airlifts out of there. We did it, the Berlin airlift. We did that the correct way. You did all the sort of stuff that you're supposed to do. These people were going to be, a lot of them were killed and massacred, probably more than we'll ever know. And ISIS is bad news. They're not going to go away. They have our weapons. The only reason the Kurds are even making them any sort of, it's going to come to the point where you're going to hear people say, airstrikes can only do so much. ISIS is a tough military outfit, and we're going to have to put boots on the ground and fight them again. You just know it's going to happen. And I don't want to see that happening. I understand the humanitarian part to get the Yazidis out of there, out of harm's way, and then we should just let them have it. You know, and, I just feel, I'm very fearful. I'm very fearful
okay,
that they're not going to happen.
So you're not in favor of us sending gobs and gobs of, tanks and heavy artillery?
They already have it. We're only providing air. It's my understanding we're only providing air cover for them. If we are providing them more weapons, they must have really got their asses kicked when ISIS first came on in June, because ISIS has, ISIS overran where my son was stationed in the Kurdish area and took over that base. At that base were Humvees and personnel carriers and weapons that we left by, our leftovers from Mr. Bush's war, okay? And we left that there, and they lost, and they're not good fighters, because what everyone forgets is the Iraqi military, the officers demand tribute. I guess the pay, there's no good jobs in Iraq, but working for the government and the military is. And those officers, those political people, demand tribute from the soldiers. And that's why when ISIS was on its way coming in, those soldiers ran. They weren't well-trained. They just ran. They didn't, you know, they threw the guns down and took off because it's a totally disorganized, terrible place. And you're right, Gary. Bush's adventure into Iraq is going to go back as one of the worst geopolitical blunders of all time. That doesn't mean Obama owes it to go in there and pull Bush's chestnuts out of the fire. That's why I don't want to see troops on the ground. I understand and respect the idea of rescuing that sect. I felt terrible about that. I really thought, gee, that's what the United States and the Western world stands for. We're not going to let those, we're going to rescue those people, put them somewhere safe in Iraq, let them work it all out. And they can't. I don't know why. I don't know why they all hate each other so much. The religions are so important. I mean, they all follow Muslims. We're all Muslims. Well, they all hate each other. I mean, to me, if we like the Methodists, the Presbyterians, and the, somebody else, I'll start getting guns and shooting each other in the country, in our country. I mean, they all have different, they all have different viewpoints of Christ and God and this and that, but they don't go around shooting each other. But over there they do, and it's been going on for centuries, and it's going to continue. This ISIS is right out of the Crusades. I mean, they are bad news. I mean, I don't disagree with that. Does that mean we have to go over there now because people are saying, well, you know what, they're going to stop planting bombs and dropping them off. They'll be worse than flying. They won't fly planes into buildings. They'll start killing, beheading little children at the movie theaters. I just don't believe that's going to happen. I think they'll be very happy with the little desert kingdom.
Gary, put on your psychologist hat for a moment. Sam said something very interesting. They're all Muslims, but religion is very much, almost tribal. Do you see a resolution here?
I don't know, Simon. It's kind of it feels kind of hopeless. It really does. I think that apparently these things go back hundreds upon hundreds of years, and it just feels hopeless now. If you asked me, back in the day when the Inquisition was in play and people were being, quartered and stretched and tortured because they weren't Christian and they had to convert, would I say, do I feel hopeless? Probably at that time I felt hopeless. I don't know if the Muslim world will come out of this. I honestly don't know. I think that when I, when I live in Los Angeles and I'm around a lot of people, and a lot of people are Muslim people and they're lovely people, but they're mostly all secular. They just are. Some of them may pray and some of them may do that, but none of them are just, really intensely religious. And when I'm around, any kind of person who's really hyper-religious, I tend to get a little uncomfortable. Not that I fear for my life if I was walking down a street in Syria or in Iraq, but I just tend to get uncomfortable. I just don't like that that position. I just don't. It just doesn't jibe with how I see the universe and the world. But it's very sad. The only other part is that we have to stop selling weapons to all these countries that feel this way. We sent billions of dollars over to Pakistan when we were fighting Afghanistan. Saddam Hussein had all of our weapons. Saudi Arabia has all of our weapons. We really are we're just arming the robbers to come and rob us. It's kind of crazy.
I find the entire scenario very disquieting. It bothers me. If I had a cache of arms and I've got a loony living next door, the last thing in the world I'd do is give him a gun.
It's the craziest thing. Simon, it's the craziest thing. And yet, Martin Marinetta and Northrop and McDonnell Douglas and all these people and all these congressmen and all these senators who live in districts that have these factories, they push this. And like I said, like the NRA would say, well, because of all these crazy police officers, we need to arm ourselves more. And then we do the same thing with other countries. We have to make sure that Saudi Arabia is not armed to the teeth because we don't want, you know, they're our friends now, so we don't need ISIS, you know. I mean, it's crazy. The whole thing is just a very short-sighted and it's dispiriting.
Gentlemen, we are almost completely flat out of time, but I would like your parting thoughts on anything we've discussed today or anything new. I'll start with you, Sam.
Great time today. Thank you very much. I think we had some really good conversations. I think we're all basically on the same page, which is good, and I hope the listening audience got something out of that and take something with them. I just want to say this. I'm amazed that celebrity deaths come in threes.
Lord, have you been talking to my wife?
Robin Williams, Lauren Bacall, and today I found out Horshack died. And Ron Palello, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, for one of my shows growing up, Welcome Back Carter, and he was Horshack, and he was there, I went, ooh, ooh, ooh. And he was funny as hell. He had a great career in the theater after that, and he died of a heart attack. So it's just amazing to me that that's what happened. These big-time celebrities die in threes, and that's my part.
Wait a minute.
That's my final thought.
He's a big-time celebrity, Horshack?
I thought he was.
Come on.
I mean, he's not on par with Mork and Mindy and Lauren Bacall, but if you go back to Welcome Back Carter, in his day, yeah, he was. Not now. I mean, his career fizzled out, obviously, Gary. I agree with you 100%.
That's a reach. You know, that's a reach for the three. That's kind of like Donnie Most from Happy Days or something died, and
is
that's
alive?
A big three. Yeah,
no,
I'm sure he's alive.
I like Horshack, so I'm punch. I'm biased.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, but on the subject of Robin Williams, I liked him. I thought he was a funny guy. Did his death warrant the excessive, and I do mean excessive, coverage on television?
I thought that it's not that, Simon. I think I did my own podcast on this. It touched me, and I just think that when you see someone who you feel is actually kind of almost actualized in a particular area and reaches almost perfection in an ability to be expressive, to be kind of innocent and pure, to say what they mean, to mean what they say, to play to win, just to leave it all on the court and to try their best. And then on the other side, to feel like, you know, we believe that that's the key to happiness. Like I think we all believe that if you could be the best you can be, and I could be the best I can be, and I could really try and really, like, make people happy and be successful and operate at and be beloved, that's the key to happiness. And the fact that it's not, because not always, at least, that this is a man that was suffering tremendously. And Paul's actually turned on him. And I think it touched us in that way, that it made us so sad that we hope that's the way. Show us the way. And I think it just made us kind of, again, very, very sad and kind of a little depressed and I don't know, maybe it just made us touch our own vulnerabilities and our own frailties for ourselves.
Okay. Gary, I think you bring up a great point. I think we're touched, everybody, not knowing that he had mental illness. I knew he was a partier, he had some alcohol and drug addictions and demons of that stuff. To me, it was not excessive. I thought the tributes were fabulous. I thought using it to try to help people, to, if, you know, to, for a cry of help type thing, if you have that, to do it. I thought the media did a good job with that, surprisingly. And I will tell you this, though, the one thing that's come out of it in talking to everybody is all fame and fortune that Robin Williams had, it's true, it doesn't buy you happiness, and that's pretty, and, you know, that should be the message of it. All the fame and all the money doesn't buy you happiness, and I think that was the underlining issue of his the reports I saw. Not the most people said it was like, wow, if I had that type of fame and money, when I was that successful, I would never be depressed. And they don't. It isn't true, as Gary pointed out.
I was listening to an interview with Howie Mandel, who suffers from severe anxiety, and he said, I would give up every dollar I have. This is recently. Every ounce of fame, every bit of money I've ever made in my life, if I can get rid of my anxiety. I know, because I know I have fun with it, and it's a joke. He goes, but I would give up everything if my anxiety would go away. So you're right.
Yeah, that's it. And I'll tell you something. I was shocked by that, you know. Just, but, you know, Dennis Miller said something the other day about him, and he said the fact that that could happen, that Robin Williams, I mean, you know, is that, you know, yep, it just amazed that it could happen to anybody. And you go, and I think the thing is, if you're in trouble, you're in a listening audience, reach out to somebody. You don't want to be alone. There are people out there to help you. No matter how rich you are, how poor you are, wherever you're at, if you're hurting, reach out to somebody. Because Robin Williams and all these people who commit suicide think they're in a better – Gary, you know this better than I do. I always hear they always think they're in a better place. I'm sure if you could ask them, they'd say, no, they're not. They'd be better off trying to deal with it. I know that's simplistic, and it's just that. I mean, I don't think you're in a better place when you're dead.
Okay, yeah. Gentlemen, it is time for us to wrap this up. I want to thank you both for taking part, and I do hope you'll be back next Sunday, and we'll pick up where we left off.
Sounds great. Have a great week, everybody.
Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. And as I said, we'll be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.